Thanks for staying with us. Our special edition of the Daily Drum, what parents need to know about childhood vaccines and returning to school, now continues. I'm Harold Fisher. A reminder for you, no phone calls tonight, but please join the conversation online using the hashtag SchoolVaccines. Joining me now are pediatrician and public health expert, Dr. Yolandra Hancock, Dr. D'Amica Walker, chair of Immunize DC, and Dr. Habib Shariat, pediatrician with Howard University Hospital. Thank you all so much for joining this conversation. Dr. Hancock, I want to start with you. Let's talk about some of the latest vaccine developments. A few weeks ago, the CDC approved vaccinations for children under five. Just last week, the two-dose Novavax vaccine was approved for adults. How would you characterize these two developments as schools prepare to open?
I'm very excited, particularly for the vaccine approval for children under the age of five. We know that parents have been chomping at the bit to get their children under the age of five vaccinated. When we look at the numbers back in January with the Omicron variant, we saw that children between the ages of 0 to 4 were disproportionately hospitalized compared to any other age group among pediatric patients. We also know that the Omicron variant specifically impacted the younger children because their air tubes, their bronchi, are much smaller than adults. And Omicron predominantly infects the upper airway, they had more severe symptoms. And parents want to do whatever they can to protect their children, not only from COVID, but from having severe illness. With this new vaccine, it's exciting that we have yet another option, especially for families that are a bit concerned about the mRNA vaccine. I know that for a lot of my families, that was one of their biggest concerns, with that this is the latest and newest technology, and so I don't necessarily want my child to get this vaccine. The alternative was Johnson & Johnson, which was not available in this country for children. So the fact that we have an additional vaccine as an option gives them some more support in terms of making that decision, particularly for their older children with this latest vaccine.
Dr. Habib, talk to me a little bit about what child vaccines are and what diseases do they prevent? And I'm talking about more broadly, not about so much COVID, but we can discuss that obviously. But just child vaccines in general, Dr. Hancock just mentioned, MMR, measles, mumps, rubella. Forgive me, I'm still working on my medical degree. But measles, mumps, rubella. What do parents need to know about that?
In general, vaccines are biological preparation, and depending on what type of vaccine we're talking about, it can contain either whole, live, weakened, live, or inactive, killed vaccine, or for the most part, majority of our vaccines are what we call subunit vaccine, which are genetic material, and sometimes only protein, fraction of a protein that is present in the disease-causing bacteria or viruses. They are not taking it from those. Most of them are bioengineered in the pharmaceutical industry and would be given as a vaccine. So the role is for this vaccine to, when we administer it to the recipient, the immune system would recognize these particles, these subunits, these substances, these proteins, and get familiar with it. So when similar protein, which is present in the bacteria or viruses, enters the body, this time as a whole alive, wild bacteria or virus, or their immune system knows this particle and immediately responds to that by mounting antibody and fighting and controlling the infections.
How long does it take, for example, for measles or mumps or rubella vaccination to begin working, and how long might it last for young children? Because I remember when my daughter, who is now an adult, going through this process when she was very, very young. Is this a lifelong thing, or does it need to be boosted, for lack of a better term?
So that's what I mentioned. There are different type of vaccines we have. We have live vaccines, which are weakened, attenuated vaccines. These live vaccines, it works exactly like the wild infection in the nature, but it's a controlled infection that is being carried out. In these cases, 2 or 3 days after they receive this vaccine, they will have, some of them, not everybody, some of them would have a mild infection, low-grade fever, which lasts for a couple of days, and it goes away in a week or so. And by the end of second or they are usually have good immune response to that live agent, which lasts theoretically for their lifetime. It's just like getting the infection once and you're immune to it for the rest of your life. On the other hand, there are other vaccines that I mentioned to inactivated or killed or subunit vaccine. These vaccines are depends on the amount that we inject to the recipient, and the immune system usually the first administration recognize it and mount some antibody. These vaccines require multiple doses. That's why you see we have diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis vaccine at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and then at 15 to 18 months, and then at 4 to 6 years, and then 10 to 11 years. So they require boosting doses to be repeated over time to prolong the immune response that is immune system has produced against these agents.
Dr. Walker, let's talk about Immunize DC, your role and its mission.
Sure. So the mission is pretty much just to continue to be able to develop patients over the lifetime. So we want to see children that are getting vaccinated at a young age over the lifespan to really advocate for vaccinations to prevent these diseases that can be prevented with vaccines. So pretty much our mission is to work with different partners in the district, from doctor's offices to OSCE to pharmacies, and really just to advocate and work together so that we can make sure to educate the district residents to make sure they are aware of what vaccines they need and also where they can get these vaccines to really help to prevent these diseases.
Talk to me about some of the challenges that your organization has had to deal with during the pandemic.
Sure. So the main, of course, with the pandemic, people aren't going anywhere, right? They don't want to go to their doctor's offices. We had a really hard time, or we definitely saw a decrease, of course, in children getting vaccinated. So the hardest part that we saw as a coalition is trying to figure out how we can work with different healthcare professionals, different organizations to still advocate for parents going and making sure that their children are still getting vaccinated. It was a very sharp decline. And so as a coalition, our job was to figure out how we can work with our partners to make sure that we are still educating people and enforcing the importance of making sure that they're still making sure to see their pediatricians and make sure that they're up to date on their vaccinations.
Have you seen any improvement since the pandemic has evolved over the past 2.5 years?
Definitely seen some improvement. One of the things being that now that that pharmacists can vaccinate as young as 3, it opened up an opportunity so that parents could also take their children to pharmacies to get vaccinated, which is a little bit more accessible than sometimes being able to make an appointment with their pediatrician. So definitely with them having that opportunity to take advantage of that, as well as people becoming more comfortable with learning how to live with COVID, as they say, we have been doing a better job of making sure that we can reach out and make sure that children are getting vaccinated.
Dr. Hancock, in your pediatric practice, what impacts have you seen on the patients regarding these new variants? Have you seen any change at all?
What I would say is the change that I have seen is parental trust in vaccines, given the fact that in real time, this is probably the first time in our society where lay public has been part of the journey of vaccine development, testing, and implementation. And because there have been changes and pivots as we have navigated through the COVID-19 pandemic, where the CDC says, don't wear a mask, put your t-shirt on your face, put any old mask on your face, then go get an N95, it has facilitated a level of distrust within the CDC, a level of distrust to the point where it is now impacting my ability as a pediatrician to talk families through getting vaccinated. And I think it's important in the medical community that we acknowledge that distrust, that we help parents in terms of us recognizing it, number one, and then talking them through. You know, when we were talking earlier, I said sometimes it's a challenge because families see us as having drank the Kool-Aid, right? Mm-hmm. We're part of the system. Clearly you are a Western trained doctor and da-da-da-da. I hear it often. I'm also a mother. And so I often ask my parents, do you think I would recommend for you something that I wouldn't do for my own child? My child is fully vaccinated at 9 years old. I went through in medical school and in pediatric training, they didn't teach us the ingredients of the vaccines. They taught us why they were used, the purpose of them, that they decrease morbidity, which is a complication from having certain infections, and mortality, death from infections like Haemophilus influenza, polio, the fact that we just had a case in New York, first time in 10 years, right? So it's talking them through what my own experience was in making the decision to get the vaccine, get all the vaccines for my daughter, so that I can tell them what are the ingredients in these vaccines. And a lot of the ingredients that families are concerned about are the same ingredients in their pots, the same ingredients in the ice cream, even worse ingredients in a bag of potato chips, right? So it's talking them through, first acknowledging the distrust that they may have with the system right now, but talking them through to a point where they can make an informed decision without having to do their own research, right? So they come in with their information. I ask them, tell me what websites you're going to. Is it www.wedontvax.com? Mm-hmm. Or is it a trusted site? So that I can vet it, look through it, and then we can talk through, okay, this person was, you know, connected to Andrew Wakefield, who was the one who misrepresented data to falsify the information that links autism to shots. That's this person subscribes to his way of thinking. He is his number one fan. So pay attention to where you're getting your information. And from doing all of that, I have been able to talk families through making the decision, not talking them into, there's a difference, talking them through making the decision for themselves. And that's, I've had to do that more in 2022 than I have had to in almost 20 years of being a pediatrician.
Why more this year than perhaps in last year?
Because I think prior to COVID, the parents I dealt with most who were opposed to getting vaccines were truly anti-vaxxers. They subscribed to conspiracy theories about population control and infertility and all of these things that we know are not true when it comes to vaccines. But when it came to navigating through the pandemic, because there were so many pivots, literally science was happening in front of all of us. Mm-hmm. And because of a lack of health literacy and science literacy, we did not collectively understand why the CDC had to make changes in terms of their recommendations, why we need to get a first booster and a second booster. It's because if you did not take an immunology class like last year, even for some of us clinicians, we need a refresher to have a clear understanding of why a booster is needed. So if some of us don't understand it, how are we to expect that mommies and daddies around the country are going to do the same?
Dr. Sharia, to Dr. Hancock's point, even just about the vaccines that we know have been around, that have been proven, and yet I'm sure that you, in your practice, encounter anti-vaxxers, particularly as it relates to people who are concerned about autism. Talk to me about that. And what do you tell your patients or the parents of your patients? What are those conversations like?
So the issue is vaccines are being monitored continuously by the CDC, by the FDA, and federal government and authorities that monitor any mishap that happens with the vaccine. And the issue of a relation between some of these vaccines and autism came about. National Academy of Medicine, formerly was Institute of Medicine, decided and put the experts on board to review all the data that is out there linking any of these vaccines to the autism. There had not been any evidence supporting such a relationship, both with the active ingredient of the vaccine in case of measles vaccine, the measles virus, and also with the other ingredient, which is like they have preservative, like they used to be, we don't have it anymore. In almost 99% of our vaccine, we do not have mercury containing or thimerosal, which use some of these sites. We're attributing that heavy mercury being the link between vaccines and autism. And specifically, this item were reviewed by FDA, by the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Medicine. And there were no links whatsoever between any of these things. And evidence actually suggested that that these vaccines are safe. And although even before this issue came up, vaccine manufacturer decidedly removed all thimerosal-containing vaccine before year 2000. And these days, there may be only one or two manufacturers of flu vaccine that may have mercury in them. For the most part, all the vaccines that are other vaccine other than influenza vaccine that are for children are free of thimerosal, mercury, and any other heavy metal that could be causing any problem.
Dr. Walker, moving forward, again, as we've seen the pandemic evolve into new challenges and some victories, where do you see your role in your organization moving forward, not just in 2022, but, you know, beyond? Because it appears that COVID in some form or another is going to continue to be with us.
Absolutely. So I definitely think with the coalition, our main thing is just making sure that we perform that, will provide that platform so that people can have information, the right information to make informed decisions. You know, as they were saying, it's not our job to force vaccines. It's our job, though, to provide the correct information so that people are informed. So definitely for us going forward, our main thing is to make sure that we use platforms like this and be able to have those conversations to provide the right resources to parents, and not just parents, but also to other healthcare professionals, and making sure that we collaborate together. I'm a pharmacist, so being able to collaborate with medical doctors and making sure that everybody knows what resources are available so that we really can help the district residents. So for us as a coalition, definitely going forward, our job is to make sure that we keep having these conversations, and most important, just providing those resources so that people are informed and that they can make the best decision using credible resources, should I say, or credible information, because we know there's a lot of mis and disinformation that is being circulated.
Are those conversations difficult?
It depends. I think it helps, though, when you form those relationships and people have that trust. So really forming those relationships. And that's why we have such a very diverse group of partners that we work with, because we know everybody has different touch points. And being able to have those conversations with people that they trust, it looks a little different. So that's why we have, like I said, pharmacists, we have pharma, we have doctor's offices, pharmacies, everybody working together. Because I think when people see people that they know and that they trust, it helps to get the point across stronger than just coming from just any and everybody.
Dr. Hancock, we know the acronym, MMR. Mm-hmm. Do you see a time when there will be an MMRC, measles, mumps, rubella, COVID? Because, as I just said, it appears, and you're the doctor, you're the doctors, but just anecdotally, this thing is not going away. It may continue to evolve. It will continue to develop new variants with various and sundry levels of infection rates. So do you think there may be a time when you may be bringing little Johnny or little Susie in, not only for measles, mumps, rubella, but also measles, mumps, rubella, COVID, instead of dealing with COVID separately?
Absolutely. When we think about the scheduled vaccines, right? So little ones start getting their vaccines as early as first or second day of life. They get their first hepatitis B. Next set of shots is 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and then 12 months, and either 15 or 18 months, and then 4 years and 11, and then as adolescents. COVID will be part of that series. There's a process that the CDC goes through to decide what is going to be part of a scheduled vaccine series. And I wanted to make sure that I add in, in terms of the question that you asked about autism, it's important for people to understand over 1 million children have now been studied. Over 1 million children have been studied to determine whether or not there's a relationship between autism and vaccines. And the resounding evidence is that there is no relationship. We have been in the vaccine space since the 1700s, when smallpox vaccine first came about. DTaP has been around since the early 1900s. So these vaccines collectively aren't new, and generations of us have received them. And absolutely, will there be a COVID vaccine as part of this series? Yes. What's going to be required is that we control our numbers. We won't be able to appreciate the seasonality of COVID until transmission comes down, in the same way we do for flu. We know flu season is somewhere around September, ends around March or April, depending on whether or not you're wearing your mask, right? We enjoyed a whole almost free flu season when we had our masks on. Once we get the numbers down, and perfectly we will be able to appreciate seasonality. Once that happens, then we will likely put COVID with a flu shot in order for us to be protected through the COVID season, if you will. And that's what I anticipate seeing if we can get our numbers down.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Novavax announced 2 weeks ago that they are working, actually they're working on a flu COVID vaccine for this coming fall. So how far they are away with the manufacturing and all those things, but it is absolutely, it is possible, and it is going to be on the horizon, and it will come sooner before.
And hopefully it'll be based on Omicron and not original COVID, because it's almost a waste of time to create vaccine based on OG COVID. That's why there's a delay. There's a potential delay in the second booster being rolled out for particularly people under the age of 50. Right now, there's a conversation in the FDA to delay 50 under getting the booster until the mRNA vaccine producers can provide us with a variant-specific vaccine so that we're not just getting boosted for boosting sake.
There's something that just occurred to me, and this goes to the very heart of dealing with confusion with vaccines. Okay, when you go and get a measles vaccine, you go and get your rubella, you go and get mumps, I would argue that parents don't know who the manufacturer is. You just go get your measles shot, you go get your mumps shot, you get your rubella shot. But with COVID, because as you know, Dr. Hancock said, this science was happening in front of us. And there's so much information out there. And so do we need to get to a point where it doesn't matter whether it's Pfizer or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson or Novavax in the scenario of a measles, mumps, rubella, COVID? Do you think that knowing who is manufacturing this is confusing or problematic for parents?
Well, you're right. In the past, for the childhood immunization vaccines, no parents were concerned. They were asking us what kind of vaccine we are administering them. Whatever vaccine we had, we will offer it based on the ingredient, not who's making it, how's making it. Because in the United States has the safest, most effective supply chain of the vaccine production. This is the true fact. And these manufacturers are bound by rigorous monitoring by the CDC and FDA in their production line. Almost no vaccine is being imported from outside into the United States. So all the manufacturing facilities are here. Mm-hmm. So the only time that this issue of who's making what came up with this pandemic, and truly it was an emergency. Many suppliers had to come into the thing. Some of them went through a couple of months of production and then they stopped it. And that's how parents were informed almost on the daily basis on what is happening with the vaccine production. And that's how some antenna went up with whose vaccine is better, whose vaccine is more effective. All these vaccines are effective, that is for sure. All of them have passed the rigorous safety paradigm that the CDC and FDA had put forward on them. So parents really should be assured that the vaccines are safe. And the question is for them to make a decision to get their kids vaccinated.
Dr. Walker, how do you address that question to parents or even loquacious children? You know, what brand? I want this brand. I don't want that brand. What is that conversation like?
Absolutely. So it comes up all the time. Of course, parents want to know, which one do we have? Do you have Pfizer? I only want to do Moderna because it's only two doses and Pfizer's three doses. So it's a great thing that they have the information out, but it does sometimes cause them to pit against one vaccine or the other. So the conversation I always have with them is just to echo, what was just said. All of them are safe. All of them are effective. The most important thing is making sure you get your child vaccinated. So always get them vaccinated with what's available versus waiting to get a certain vaccine because you just want a certain manufacturer. Because then that obviously just exposes your child. That limits the amount of time that you have to protect them because you just want a certain manufacturer. So always encourage them. The most important thing is to get them vaccinated more so than just to wait on a certain one to suit your preference.
This is just a reminder that this is a special edition of the Daily Drum, what parents need to know about childhood vaccines and returning to school. I do have a question that I think we don't hear a lot about, and I'll ask you this, Dr. Hancock. What about side effects? What should parents look for when their children are receiving the vaccine?
It's an excellent question. First thing that's important to note is the difference between a side effect and an adverse outcome. A side effect is something that we sort of expect to happen after you've gotten a shot or taken a medicine, right? If you take diphenhydramine, also known as Benadryl, you might get drowsy. Those are the things that we anticipate. When the child gets a vaccine, they're going to have some arm soreness. That's a side effect. They may even have slight fever. That's a side effect. They may have some tenderness at the site of injection. That's a side effect. But if they have a temp up to 106, which can sometimes be associated with the vaccine DTaP, that's an adverse outcome. If they have a severe allergic reaction, that's an adverse outcome. We've seen a couple of adverse outcomes with COVID-19, particularly myocarditis or inflammation of the heart muscle among adolescent patients with the mRNA vaccines. Those are adverse outcomes. So I talk with families about what side effects to anticipate. A little bit of fever, a little bit of fussiness, a little achiness. Massage through when they get the vaccine, rub those little thighs so the medicine doesn't sit in their legs. Give them a little bit of a fever reducer, pain reliever, so that it helps navigate them through, so that they can anticipate what's going to happen. We also talk about adverse outcomes that may be associated with it. And to Dr. Habib's point, in terms of vaccine safety, there was a vaccine, the meningococcal vaccine, when about 2 years into my practice, it was associated with Guillain-Barré. The reason why we were able to note that was that we reported it out. There's a system called Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System that all healthcare providers are required to report in when there is a concerning adverse outcome. Because we had reported in this Guillain-Barré, which is inflammation within the neurological system, a red flag went up. And within a couple of months, it was like, oh, wait, pull it off the market. It was pulled off the market, reformulated, put back on the market after extensive testing, and we've not had any issues since then. So it shows the system works. But it also helps us to know there. We get alerts all the time through email of what to look out for. And then we make sure we communicate that to our families. Mm.
I want to allow each of you to just give me a final thought of 30 seconds each. Dr. Walker, I'll start with you. Your final thoughts about this conversation.
One, I'm glad that this conversation is happening. It's very important that parents are aware, parents are informed, parents are really just making the best decision for their children. I am a mom, so I can understand the questions that arise, but it's really important to make sure that we're all doing our part to make sure that we keep our children vaccinated, to keep them safe, especially for those people who cannot get vaccinated. It helps to keep them safe as well. So continue to have these conversations, continue to ask questions, because that is what helps to make those informed decisions. So I'm definitely glad this platform was available. Continue to utilize all the resources that are out there with DC Health, with OSCE, Immunize DC. Our platform as well has resources, so just continue to stay informed and continue to keep your baby safe.
Briefly, Dr. Shariat.
Well, I think we have had the vaccine, COVID vaccine, for children since November of last year. I am concerned about the lack of enthusiasm, as I would like to see, in African-American community to bring their kids for them for COVID vaccination. And this is a very timely, the school's going to start. This is the time, because the vaccine only, that is the only way to keep us safe, to keep us outside the hospital, to keep us from really tremendous pain and suffering that COVID can cause. Children have been doing fine, but remember, we have had 400 children dying of COVID vaccine, most of them younger than 4 years of age. So the vaccine now is out there for 6 months and older. I encourage the parents to take action and bring their children for immunization.
Dr. Hancock, briefly, final thought.
Sure. I would tell parents to not let fear be what drives your decisions in terms of the care of your child. Connect with a trusted medical source that has no bias when it comes to making these decisions, and share what sources you are using with your healthcare professional so that you can talk through making the right decision for your child. Because as you mentioned, particularly for children of color, we will be disproportionately impacted if we lose herd immunity with these preventable diseases.
Thank you all so much. I really appreciate your input. And finally tonight, it has been a long and very difficult 2.5 years of the COVID pandemic. And it has evolved, but it is still with us. We have also evolved in order that we find some semblance of normalcy. Well, no matter how you may feel about vaccines for yourself or your children, remember this, COVID has no feelings, and it appears that it will continue to impact our lives for many years to come. To stay safe, we will continue to evolve to survive it. I'm Harold Fisher. Thank you for watching and listening. Good night.